That space ninjas are among us, there is no doubt. But where did space ninjas come from, and why are they here? These are just some of the questions we will do our very best to answer. Welcome to another delightful episode of B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Greetings, everyone. Hello, listeners and viewers, if you're from outer space and or a space ninja, I guess. Welcome to B-Movie Mania. I'm your host, Crazy Chris Hudson, but don't call me strange. And with me tonight, posing menacingly outside a building, is Paul Brooks.
Oh, Chris, come in. Shut the door. Would you like some toast?
And vanishing faster than a politician's election day promises, Jason Hulls.
Some call me strange.
And finally, Optimus Fine himself, Mike Hayes.
Sorry, hold on a second. I'm washing up real quick.
Why are you washing up?
Look it, you're not the one covered in nipple blood, okay? Hold on. All right, I'm here.
As you can tell from the intro, dear listeners, we watched Space Ninjas, a curious film that takes place at a classified high school somewhere in Asia. Exact location, confidential.
Kuala Lumpur.
Or Kuala Lumpur.
Is where
Lumpur.
It's at. Yeah. It's in Malaysia, yeah. The capital of Malaysia.
It's at a school.
An international high school. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kuala Lumpur also has the three of the world's 10 largest shopping malls.
And schools, apparently, by this movie. God damn. It's a huge school.
It's pretty big.
They're big schools.
So who wants to talk about this Scott McQuaid-directed movie who has no other IMDb credits to his name?
Quick takes.
Quick takes.
Wait, do we have a choice not to do the episode? We get to choose to talk about it or not?
We could just, this is a choice?
I like to offer the illusion of choice, Mike. You don't really get a choice.
Okay.
It was shot on a shoestring budget in an intense 22 days.
That's intense. 22 days.
$20,000.
Scott McQuaid.
Scott McQuaid is a British guy who
McQuaid.
got
is that joke word?
Got a job being the director of an arts program in Kuala Lumpur and does a lot of stage stuff. So he made this movie.
Look, his bio, Scott McQuaid's bio, is more interesting than this movie, without question.
His mom wrote it.
His mom wrote the bio on IMDb?
I don't know who else did, because if he did it, it sounds really self-indulgent. But it sounds like a mom really wrote it.
It does. Well, it says Wayne Crawford. I don't think his mom's name is Wayne Crawford, but thank you, IMDb user Wayne Crawford.
Could be an alias. You never know what moms go by these days.
Could be Wayne Crawford.
Now it's time to get our hands a little dirty.
It stars who? A bunch of kids from Kuala Lumpur, really.
Yeah.
It's the Kuala Lumpurian version of the Breakfast Club.
For fuck's sake, quick takes.
Quick takes!
All right, Mike, let's get your quick take on the record.
Well, since I'm trapped here in a movie about space ninjas, it's just less than ideal.
Paul, is your quick take classified?
No, shit ninjas.
And Jay, which side does your buttered quick take land on?
Oh,
no.
You know, I think we all might owe Carrot Top an apology.
I still haven't watched that movie, FYI.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
What does that tell you then, Paul?
Yeah, Dirk Benedict is in this movie.
What?
Dirk Benedict is in this movie.
Is he in the movie or is he around the movie?
Yeah, he is around.
Well, it's a very classic. Look, this is not uncommon. I actually just did this for my movie.
Like a week ago.
Oh, so careful where we tread when we talk about this format.
Yeah.
Zack Attack. Ah.
I'll set this up for you, Chris, if you don't mind. Dirk Benedict is Jack Strange. He plays Jack Strange, and he's the host of a sort of Ripley's Believe It or Not slash, what was the name of the Jonathan Frakes show?
Twilight Zone.
No. Fact or Fiction, Belief, Stranger Than Fiction.
Hold on, let me confirm that. Yes, you are correct, Paul.
Thank you, Jay, for covering the typing portion of this episode.
It's shot live for some reason, and it's about, I guess it's supposed to be about sort of like weird phenomenon, you know, kind of like a rating time.
Rating time.
No, okay, Paul, thank you for covering that. So is this film actually happening? Like, is it a movie or is it a recreation of events? Like, are all of these people actors?
It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Okay, so nobody knows, right? Because why would Jack Strange have the movie?
This, I think it's a recreation of actual events in Malaysia.
Okay, so no, but no actors were actually harmed by space ninjas in this film.
No, and you can tell by the amazing special effects. And the weapons stolen from video games.
You know, I might actually like this movie more, thinking about it as the entire movie is just one of those like investigation discovery recreations.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense to me.
Well, like I said, this Dirk Benedict show is recorded live in like a studio somewhere. So maybe he has a public access show. And this was a movie that was like in their library. It's in the public domain or something. And so he's just making up stories and then playing a movie. I don't know.
Wait. Yeah. So what I think this is a recreation. I think the Jack Strange show made this as a retelling of events that supposedly happened. So the real story is way more intense. You were just seeing the, like, you know, the recreation, the low budget recreation of.
I think you are giving them way more credit than they deserve, but sure.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Jack Strange is talking and then it cuts to breaking the fourth wall of them filming the thing for some reason? Then it cuts back to Jack Strange within the reality of the Jack Strange? Like, it's.
that's what I'm talking about.
It's
bad.
Thank you.
Well, Jay mentioned the events of the movie. Let's talk about the events of the movie.
All six. Let's do it.
All six. Okay.
Jay, six events. You look like you're excited to talk about space ninjas.
I am shocked to hear you say that, but yeah, I'll talk about it. Sure. It's The Breakfast Club.
It is.
It's the beginning of the film is The Breakfast Club. And that is not disguised. It is. They've said it. Scott McQuaid has said it. He loves The Breakfast Club. The Macho Man, Randy Savage, when he was on later with Judd Nelson, also made several references to The Breakfast Club. So any Macho Man jokes from here on out stand.
I really wish the Macho Man loved space ninjas. Do you think he saw this before he died?
No, I don't think the timeline adds up there. But yeah, it's The Breakfast Club. You got the misfit kids or the different types of kids coming to school on a Saturday night for detention with the teacher who doesn't want to be there.
Okay, is that a thing? I've never heard of Saturday night detention.
Yeah, neither have I.
Or it's Kuala Lumpur, Paul. It's not. It's cultural.
No. Oh. Great.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I think out of all of us, I'm going to venture to say you've had the most share of Saturday detentions among us. Do they ever happen at night?
Oh, by far. Oh, yeah.
Chris used to get Saturday detentions all the time in high school.
Oh, yeah. I lost several weekend mornings, but Mike has something to say about that.
Yeah, well, I was looking up this Saturday, you know, mostly night detention. Like, that seems weird to me. I get after school a little bit, but a Saturday night, the sun's going down in Kuala Lumpur. And I thought, this can't be real. But I did find something called Chapter 6, Malfoy and the Doubling Desire, and it looks to be a fanfic, a Harry Potter fanfic about night detention.
Let's talk about some of our characters.
It was Malfoy's 35th consecutive night in detention.
No J.K. Rowling stuff.
Let's get this over with.
So, Paul, let's talk about the character archetypes on display in Space Ninjas.
Yeah, you have the nerdy kid who has a Batman wallet or something, I don't know. You have the sort of like cool, badass skater girl. I don't know.
Stanley.
You have kind of the more catty, I don't know if you'd consider her like popular girl. That's all I remember.
You just watched it.
Yeah.
Jay, do you have the rest of the characters in your detailed notes?
Nah, I think he hit it. Well, there is the Japanese schoolgirl.
Yeah, Kiko.
There's a professor.
And the jock.
Omar.
The jock?
He said the jock, I thought.
Oh, you said the jock? Omar? Okay.
Yeah, Omar.
I did not say the jock.
Oh, okay, there's a jock.
I said the nerd.
Zach.
Sorry, there's the jock, the nerd, the Japanese schoolgirl, the skater girl.
Tammy's the blonde.
And the popular girl.
Tammy, yeah.
And then the teacher who doesn't want to be there.
And also Professor Rosencrantz.
Right.
Yes, and his cat Guildenstern.
Cat Guildenstern. Which is only there just for a fucking throwaway line.
At the very
that,
end.
Right?
Yeah.
That is the only
That's
reason.
The only reason,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but did anything Professor Rosencrantz say make any sense at all?
No.
What are you working on?
This is one of those questions that have eluded mankind since the beginning of time.
Yeah? What is it?
I'm trying to work out the formula for why buttered toast always lands butter side down when you drop it. Watch.
Well, you understand that the buttered toast phenomenon is an observation that, you know, buttered toast tends to land butter side down after it falls. It's mostly believed to be just an idiom representing pessimistic outlooks. But within this film, Dr. Rosencrantz, he's not a doctor professor. He's a high school teacher. He's a fucking guy. He is testing in his lab when Stan Lee walks in to see if butter always lands.
You said that like the guy who invented Spider-Man.
Didn't everyone say it like that?
I said Stan Lee.
I said Stan.
It's Stan Lee.
Stan the not man. Sorry, Mike.
It's okay. But the origin of the buttertoast phenomenon is said to be an old proverb from the North Country. Written accounts can be traced to mid-19th century, including a poem that reads, "I never had a slice of bread, particularly large and wide, that did not fall upon the floor and always on the buttered side."
Oh.
Why is this professor at a high school, like Saturday night, literally throwing pieces of bread on the floor? Like he has nothing better to do?
Isn't that exactly what he said?
I guess.
Yeah, his wife passed away a couple years ago, and he's thrown himself into his work and studying absolute garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
That's enough about him.
While he's doing that, the students are in their detention, and we get a beautiful 17-minute-long scene filled with character development and just sitting in a classroom.
I felt like I was in detention.
Like, we really get to know the characters here, right? We care about every single one of them by the time the Space Ninjas show up.
Well, I think this is really just another Breakfast Club thing. I mean, because that's what a lot of the Breakfast Club is. It's just sitting around in detention with the various characters talking to each other. But it's a lot... What's the word I'm looking for? In the Breakfast Club, it's a lot better.
Well, the kids are constantly making fun of each other and just picking at each other. And that whole thing gets old fast when there's no other level to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think this is the whole script, if I may be completely transparent right now. I think there are some really funny jabs the kids do at each other. I think there's some funny, clever, like, ooh, little moments or goofs or whatever. But the setup to each of those things seems so labored and, like, not well presented that when it gets to the actual funny joke that was probably like the inciting thought for a scene, it doesn't pay off, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they you're right, everything is belabored, and it doesn't help that for whatever reason it like 70 or 80% of this movie is ADR.
Oh,
and I don't know why.
It just makes it feel unbelievable and disingenuous, right? Yeah, like it's just, it takes you out a little bit. It's not mixed all the. I think everything in this movie is ADR'd, Paul. Like footsteps are ADR'd in this.
Pretty
thing.
Close, yeah.
Yeah, and it's very dark, which isn't always a bad thing. Like I would say, technically, the camera work. I mean, again, we've seen way worse than camera work that's happening here. So it's okay, but. I mean, because the ninjas, when they roll in, they cut the power to the school. So 90% of the movie is in very dark scenes. And so you've got very dark scenes, everything ADR'd. It gets to be a bit of a chore after a while.
Not only is it dark, like visually dark, it's also like the color correction on this is not good. It's like really flat. And for streaming, you know, that doesn't translate very well. There's a lot of like pixelation and everything, or artifacting.
Paul, at least it's not like you know, like Mando, or as Carl Weathers would say,
oh,
Mando.
I honestly see. I think that like because that's the trend.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we've talked about this on the podcast, but I complain about it a lot to these guys. That if you watch Mandalorian or Boba Fett or. I mean, I haven't seen any of the Zack Snyder fucking Superman versus Batman or any of that shit, but it's all the same color grading where it's so dark you can barely tell what's going on. It's so undersaturated that it's like almost black and white, and that's like the trend these days. And it kind of looks like that where everything is, you know, darkened to try to be more mysterious or more gritty. I don't know.
Do you think this is where it started?
No.
Do you think fucking thinking
again, the timeline doesn't add up. No, I don't. I do not think that.
Do you think though?
No.
Scott McQuaid was a visionary.
Do you think Mr. Swingers saw Space Ninjas and went, "I need to do this"?
Who is Mr. Swingers?
Mr. Swingers!
John Favreau.
Yeah, Mr. Swingers. We all know him as Mr. Swingers.
No.
Like that. That joke was so money.
This episode is dead anyway.
Hey, can we do rating time? This place is dead anyway.
Rating time!
Well, first of all, I want to get back to something Jay said.
Oh,
that
no.
there are no other levels to this movie. Jay, yeah. I ask you, do Space Ninjas not count as another level to this movie?
Whoa, wow.
Not really. I mean...
Wow, okay then.
Sort of. Okay, so the Space Ninjas attack, and you don't ever learn too much about them. They look like motorcycle riders.
How do they even know that they... Okay, I get why they figured out that they were ninjas, because they had some throwing stars that... You know, like landed on the girl's skateboard and stuff like that. Fine. How did they ever know or determine that they were from space?
Well, that's a good question. They teleport in and out a lot, but I mean...
They could be quantum leaping.
Yeah, I guess they just assume.
There is a scene where they discuss what to call them, and I can't tell you if they cover that part, Paul, but it was weird because this movie is very self-aware.
Ugh.
They reference things sounding like they're from a bad B movie. Like that's a quote there.
Yes.
And
please don't ever do that. If you're listening, if you're a filmmaker, don't do this. Don't say, "Oh, this feels like it's something out of a bad B movie." Because it is, motherfucker.
It's a second level, and they do this in this movie too, but I feel the trope of like comparing to whatever the reality of the film is to a movie. Like in this movie, Zach, the main kid, is always like, "You're this," or "They're gonna die next because they're the big titted blonde,"
right?
And stuff like that. It's just
It's like Scream. They're trying to pull from Scream.
But Scream at least was like the first time they did that, and it was clever,
and it was the whole basis of the entire film.
Yeah, and this just
is meta.
Except at one point, Zach goes really sad, and this is maybe the best acting in the film. He's really sad, and he says, "I'm going to die next." And he did have to say all the stuff before for that line to make sense, but I don't know if it was worth it.
But you don't need that line.
I'm just saying it was the best line in the fucking movie, Jay.
Well, sorry.
Whatever. We're all screwed anyway.
Oh, Tammy for sure.
Why'd you say that?
In the horror movies, the school jock dies first, usually followed by the annoying blonde with the big personality. It's Tammy.
What about me?
I don't know. I haven't worked out who you are yet.
And you? When are you dying?
Oh, I won't die. The audience will connect to my character. I'm too likable.
Hey, can we talk about the elephant in the room, please?
What elephant?
Yes.
All right, so I feel like they were trying to come up with some sort of new angle that you've never seen before. But the thing with these fucking space ninjas is that they can't see you. They can only sense you when you, literally when you exhale.
Yes. I wanted to talk about this, Paul.
By the way, if you're talking, it's okay for some reason. But yeah. if you go like this, they know exactly where you are.
And they're up in your
It's
face.
Like a quiet place, except with your breath.
Mm-hmm. Well, at one point, they even put like surgical masks on, like we're all familiar with in COVID. Now, this movie is pre-COVID, mm-hmm. but did this movie predict COVID man. And how people don't want to wear their fucking masks?
I'm just going to say the timeline doesn't add up, even though it does.
I mean, unfortunately... Asian culture has been much more into masks for longer than
right.
us. Very strong, and we'll never get sick and give a shit about anyone other than themselves, Western culture yeah. people.
They're not blind. They were chasing us down the hall. Yeah, but I think they can track us through our breathing.
Nani?
What?
What makes you say that?
It came this close to me, and when I stopped breathing, it's as if it couldn't see me. But when I exhale, it could see me.
What? Can I ask this then? Okay, so the ninjas can see when you exhale carbon dioxide, right? That's what it's decided?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. What do the space ninjas do? Do they not breathe? They don't exhale carbon dioxide? Because otherwise...
Well, no, they're aliens.
No, they're like plants. They breathe in carbon dioxide through their vision.
Okay.
And they exhale oxygen.
Out of their helmet?
Out of their helmet.
Okay, but here... So that answers sort of my question, but it doesn't answer the big problem, which is, what the fuck can they see then? If they can only see carbon dioxide,
oh, you know,
what
Mike,
the
let me look this
see?
Up real quick.
Okay.
It appears what they see is jack shit because they they let the kids sit around talking for 20 minutes, like whole monologues are spouted, and they're just looking around like they can't see anything. And eventually one of them will take a breath.
These ninjas should have just annihilated these kids in 10 seconds.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, yeah, it didn't really matter because everybody dies.
Okay, but hold on now. You say everyone dies, but at some point, two of the kids did start drinking out of dirty... Or not drinking, I'm sorry. At some point, two of the kids start breathing out of dirty straws they found on the floor. And that seems to be fine. So they must have lived throughout all of it.
Well, not entirely. And that happened... while the space ninjas were preoccupied stabbing the Japanese girl with this Final Fantasy VII sword.
Oh, yeah, the big one.
It was the big one?
Yeah, by the way, that was a terrible plan when they're like, the main girl, what's her name, Keiko?
No, main girl's Stanley.
Stanley. They're in, like, the cafeteria or some shit, and she goes, okay, everybody, don't breathe or whatever. Hold your breath. And then they just, like, get under tables.
Under? Paul, I know you're thinking this. They go under literally a table that one of the ninjas is perched on.
Yes. If just hold your breath and leave.
Just go.
Just go somewhere else.
Well, Paul, that kind of brings me to another point is you can't just leave the school.
Yes,
this
you
school,
can.
Yes, you can.
No, the geography of this school is fucking insane. It's like an... M.C. Escher took inspiration for his paintings from this school. Like, they're walking through, they're in a classroom. They start in a classroom, right? Mm-hmm. But to escape, they have to go through the creepy canteen, the pool, the gymnasium, a couple hallways. There's the auditorium, the pool again, maybe the gym again. I don't know. There's like, It's like the school is a maze.
Is that what they're trying to do, though? Are they actively even trying to leave?
No.
Well, especially when they rehook up.
They can't because the guard, they said, the place doesn't have power anymore, so that means the front gate is locked. So there's no way out. But, like, climb the wall, dude.
Yeah, right?
All right, I know, Chris, this is your episode, but can I do a little role play DM for all of you quick?
Let's go for it, okay. Mike. Let's go for it.
You all approach a 12-foot-tall wall at a school that is a very rich school with a ton of things, and there's about 40,000 janitors' closets in it. What do you do?
Hold my breath and get over the wall.
Yeah. Okay.
End of role play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yep. Find one of the 800 ladders within this fucking school and just climb over the damn wall.
Get a ladder.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I would plant the Final Fantasy sword in the ground, stand on the hill, and climb over the wall.
Jay, I need you to roll.
Okay. I succeeded.
Oh, good job. Critical escape.
I flipped, yes.
Yeah.
Well, now that Jay succeeded and flipped over the wall, I would like to ask Paul and Mike what the fuck the plan is the Space Ninjas have in mind. Why?
I don't know.
What are they doing?
Well, you never hear them speak. Is there anything revealed about anything? About, you know, where they're from? Or
there is. Yeah. This is why Professor Rosencrantz is such an important character. Not only is his equipment made of clockwork, so it resisted the EMP blast that the Space Ninjas apparently put over the school, but he also theorized that the Space Ninjas practice the ancient art of some sort of samurai bullshit that lets them probe.
Whatever
they're attacking to see if the whatever the army or whatever they're attacking can be easily defeated.
That's a wild assumption, too.
That is a very wild assumption. It doesn't really at all explain why they're attacking a fucking school on Saturday.
With four people in it.
With four people in it versus, some sort of military installation. You know, Predator, you get Predator versus some pretty badass dudes. Space Ninjas, you get against, like, some high school kids.
Dude, they're the anti-Predator. Predator, like, finds the warriors of the planet, you know, and he wants to fight the best of the best and win. Space Ninjas find, like, five high school pubs in Kuala Lumpur. They want the easy trophy. They're trying to get the low-hanging fruit.
That's it.
Yeah. Also, I have to say that I was disappointed, because I didn't know anything about this going in. I usually go in dark, you know.
None of us did.
But I like Dirk Benedict. I'm a huge Battlestar Galactica fan. Obviously, he was in the original 1978 series. So I pulled a poster, and I started working on the header prior to watching the movie. Sometimes I can't help myself. You guys know how I like my headers.
We love your headers.
But I the poster is like Dirk Benedict, and he's got like a red eye like he has in the beginning of the movie. Fine, whatever. But it's outer space, you know, behind the characters on the poster. So I'm thinking to myself, great, this is going to be like a fun, weird outer space romp or whatever. But there's no, you know, there's no outer space at all. It's just that they're ninjas from space and they're just in the school the whole time. Very disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Paul, I'm sorry about your disappointment, but I would like to actually counter Jay's point about this being a bad place to invade if you're trying to probe a planet. Because I think if you're going to go in somewhere and you don't know anything about the planet, you might want to learn something while you're there. So why not kill and murder the youth, see what kind of stock they are, and pick up a couple math problems or social studies on the chalkboards and while you're at it.
Well, don't they actually justify why the ninjas are at the school? Because they say, they think, in fairness, they attack, in the samurai tactic, they attack a weak part of the planet just to see how everybody responds.
Oh, to see if someone responds in. Well, thank you for making sense and ruining my joke.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. Well, that leads me into what's your favorite kill?
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So pretty much everybody dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the kids except Stanley. Stanley's the sole survivor.
Final girl.
The other four kids die. We've got The security guard that bites it, Godfrey Ho is in it for some reason. Fucking dies.
Godfrey Ho, what are you doing?
We got to, hold on. We have to talk about Godfrey goddamn Ho in this movie. Because it's amazing. Like, that's why I think Scott McQuaid is a great dude. No matter what we say about this film, he obviously has a super huge passion. Godfrey Ho's not a fucking, like, easy pull. Like, I mean, maybe easy to get him to be in your movie because what else is he fucking doing? And he'll do anything. But, like, he's not like...
I didn't know he was still alive.
Yeah, well, there's that. But also, like, Godfrey Ho's a fairly pseudo-deep cut in terms of, like, B-movie stuff,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
He's no Tommy sure. Wiseau or something. Tommy Wiseau will... do
well,
anything.
Scott McQuaid, you know, he lives in that region of the world where Godfrey Ho may be. I don't know where Godfrey Ho's living these days, but
Scott McQuaid went to finished school. I think he's about our age. He went to school and then moved to Hong Kong and worked on Hong Kong films for a number of years.
It's just a guy who realized his passion and just went for it hard.
He loved martial arts movies as a kid, moved to Hong Kong to work on those movies, became a fucking expert in a martial art, and then retired from that to make this movie.
Well, to your point, Mike, also the actor who played Professor Rosencrantz, I forget the actor's name offhand, but he picked him to be in this movie because he was in John Carpenter's very first movie, Dark Star. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott loves this shit.
Yeah,
and so
Scott's
got
a lot of right ideas going, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott, if you're listening, if nothing else, thank you for pulling in Godfrey Ho, who, as you guys know, I mean, because we've actually reviewed some of his stuff on the podcast, or not on the podcast, but on me and Mike's TV show. We did Ninja the Protector and Ninja Hunt, I believe.
Yeah.
And in Ninja the Protector...
Mm-hmm.
The theme song from that movie is actually the theme song for B-Movie Mania. So there's a nice little Godfrey Ho connection for you there.
Oh, we also did Ninja Terminator in the marathon.
Yes, thank you. Okay, favorite kills. Sorry.
Favorite kills.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum.
Paul, why don't you go? You're already talking. Keep it going.
Tammy's kill was actually fairly gnarly. Even though she was oddly not bothered by it, she got her whole arm chopped off. She was fighting a space ninja bravely and got her whole arm chopped off. And her reaction was, and then she got her leg chopped off. And so, like, her right arm was chopped off, her left leg was chopped off, and she was standing there for like a second before she tipped over. And then got stabbed in the head. So I'll have to go with Tammy.
Jay, how about yours?
Well, mine isn't necessarily a kill, but it's a death. My favorite death is Bruce Lee's.
I wondered about that. Is that supposed to be Bruce Lee? Because the
totally.
Silhouette,
yes.
The silhouette is all wrong. God. The like
what?
Karate screams he does are all wrong.
It's Bruce Lee.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's definitely Bruce Lee.
Yeah. So Professor Rosencrantz talks about his ability to clone things, and he said he can
what
clone
the
people,
fuck are
but
you guys
they don't last
about?
Very long. So in this one moment. Which is probably, I mean, honestly, probably my favorite part of the movie. Pick one. The ninjas are there, and there's two ninjas, and you don't often see two ninjas together in the movie, but there are two of them there. And this door opens, and there's fog and light, and who should step out but a cloned Bruce Lee. And he starts whipping up on the ninjas.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. And then he is like, body doesn't. Last his body breaks down because he's a clone and he sort of just evaporates in these glowing ashes.
Who's that?
Just something I whipped up in the lab.
Is that?
Come on, let's move.
Well, because unfortunately the professor said it took him like 40 minutes to find where they were. Because again, this high school is a maze.
Yeah.
So he was around for like 3 minutes before he like... If you've ever seen that type of flash paper that just goes up immediately, that's what happened to him.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He like burns like fire.
I want to say real quick what did throw me off, thinking like I thought it was Bruce Lee, but what maybe made it not... possibly Bruce Lee, is here's what Bruce Lee sounds like. And here's what the clone Bruce Lee sounds like.
And here's what Jason Lee sounds like.
Man, why can't they bring back or remake good shows like BJ and the Bear? Now, there's a concept I can't get enough of, a man and his monkey.
All right, Mike, which was your favorite kill?
My favorite kill, and I'm surprised no one took it, but I'm actually glad no one took it. I liked everyone else's kills, but I liked Kiko's kill because I think it's Tammy's was also in this level of all the special effects in terms of deaths were done with like, how do you call it, like a masking in the editing software. Like there's just a line drawn across and it goes like, it just, it's how you do it in the thing. They draw a mask and it goes away or is involved or whatever. And so it's a fine sharp line that happens across, say a missing arm is missing. And then there's just a missing line on that person's body. And so that's how it all works. And so Kiko gets Final Fantasy right in the tum-tum. And then, so she's like, oh no, I breathed. And they stab her right there in the gut. And then they lift up the giant fantasy sword and she slides down it. And it looks so fucking funny. Because it is so like cheaply done where there's just it's just really good. I genuinely guffawed at that.
Yeah, I suppose if you're a fan of like Final Fantasy stuff or manga or whatever, like all the stuff that has the giant fuck off swords, maybe you'll get some enjoyment out of that.
Paul, how big do you want a sword to be?
Just a regular size. What I want is not. I don't care about the size of the sword, Mike. I want. I want a lot of swords. I want the knife and sword show, and I want to buy, as I have actually, lots of swords and knives.
Well, Chris, what's your favorite kill?
My favorite kill, I'm surprised none of you said it, but my favorite kill was the security guard who gets stabbed in the nipples from the back.
That's the nipple bloodline?
That's where the nipple blood comes from. Splatters all over those kids.
Especially Tammy.
Oh, no one looked like they were particularly put out by being killed or stabbed or whatever.
Yeah, his reaction was so like, oh no, I'm getting stabbed.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty easy way to go. I'd be okay with that too.
You're right. I wouldn't mind getting killed off in this movie either.
Oh, hey, Chris. This is what Tommy Lee sounds like.
Yeah. Wow.
God damn it.
Here I come, Tacoma!
Hey, while we're at it, we could do one of Chris's favorites and say this is what Jamie Lee Curtis sounds like.
You know what that? You know what that makes me think of?
Rating time.
Rating time.
Yes!
Rating time.
Thank Christ.
Yes.
All right. So for this movie, Space Ninjas, we're going to rate this. I texted you guys about it, but I forgot to mention it in the episode. But we're going to rate this 1 to 100 jump scare cats.
What?
jump scare cats. There's one moment in the movie where Guildenstern, the cat, jumps and scares the shit out of the kids.
Oh yeah.
It's like it was jump scare. It's just cats. There to be a jump scare. The jump scare cat.
I don't remember seeing a cat at all.
Is that when they go back to Rosencrantz and he's got the lights out and he's
Guildenstern.
He gives Stan Lee a fucking like power glove or something.
That's why they made the joke.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's that scene. But this cat just jumps out of nowhere, scares the shit out of everyone. Okay. Jump scare cats. Jay.
So it's Scott McQuaid's first film, so I respect that. He got it done, he got it out there, he got it distributed. That's cool. I don't think the action editing is particularly strong. I think the edits needed to be faster because the action all comes across kind of slow and labored. I honestly think the location was pretty cool. The school is fine. That's a fine location for a movie. You know, most of the technical images and the camera work is fine. I don't know. They tried to do something different with the sensing the breathing thing, but we kind of took that apart. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to suggest this. I don't think I'd ever watch it again, really, for any reason. I've been through it. So I'm going to say 30 jump scare cats.
Wow. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, I about a half hour Woo. In, I was like, I'm mm-hmm. done.
Wow, okay then. Paul.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's actually not a terrible concept. The Breakfast Club meets killer ninjas from space. Okay, you know, like if I saw that description somewhere, I would say I wouldn't mind checking this out. It really is just in the execution, you know. There's a lot to be desired there, and I pretty much am with Jay on this one. I'm going to go, I'll go 28 jump scare cats that I didn't see in the film.
Okay, Mike, talk to me about some space ninjas.
Let me talk to you about some space ninjas, Hudson, here. Oof, boy. I genuinely think this movie might hit with a much younger demographic than us. I feel maybe middle school kids might enjoy this movie. Genuinely. Unironically. Well, maybe slightly ironically. Yeah. Maybe cynical, ironic kids in middle school might enjoy this movie. But it's not my thing. It felt like if Disney Channel did indie flicks, this seemed like kind of what it might feel to me. And I'm not anyone who watches that shit, unfortunately. As much as I watch like watching bad kids movies, this ain't it. And it's fine. You know, I think there's some clever stuff that got bogged down by trying to make the clever stuff work, but that stuff worked at its detriment. Yeah, so I'm gonna give it 40. This is what Geddy Lee's guitar sounds like.
What?
Yes. Well done. Chris, what do you think?
You know, you guys aren't wrong. I mean, I picked this sight unseen basically just off of a trailer and a couple articles I read about the movie. And, you know, yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment. I don't know. I laughed more at this than I did for Chairman of the Board. And that's at the intentional jokes, and the unintentional humor was kind of pushed it up above for me. So it's fun, ultimately forgettable. It's good enough that you know, McQuaid was working on another movie before COVID hit, so it's gotten me interested enough to like check that out maybe someday, but
yeah,
I don't need to see this again. So I'm gonna go with 55 jump scare cats.
Fair.
I'd like to say McQuaid does have a YouTube channel called Pop Up Theater. That has some stuff because he was doing some podcasts like fiction audio stuff and some, you know, live action plays and stuff like that he was showing. And while I can't say I've watched them, I'm going to watch a couple of them because the trailers look actually pretty fun, actually. So I'm gonna check him out.
Yeah, and he's an author. He's involved in theater. Like, the guy has done a tremendous amount of work.
I think he's got the passion, and he's not starting from like a terrible place on things. I think he's got nowhere to go but up with some things.
Yeah, I would be curious to see what he does next.
He can also kick our asses up and down Main Street.
Why do you think I gave him a 55 instead of something worse?
He has the title Hero of Wira in Salat Harimu. I'm not familiar with the martial arts
name. I'm sure you pronounced that perfectly fine, Mike. We will get no emails about your pronunciation because no one fucking contacts us. So send us an email if you like this movie or this episode.
Or want to tell me how to pronounce that.
Yeah, we've never gotten an email.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
So yes, Maniacs, we're taking, as we did last season, we're taking a little mid-season break. Last season, I got in trouble for picking a movie called Santa's Summer House.
Hey, Paul, fuck you for that.
12 minutes of croquet.
For our Christmas in July special. So this year, we're going to simplify things just a little bit and do a 4th of July special. Just regular 4th of July. A Desert Storm vet who was killed in combat rises from the grave on July 4th. To kill the unpatriotic citizens of his hometown after some teens burn an American flag over his burial site.
God, this is Boomer City.
Ted
Cruz wet dream.
William Smith. Isaac Hayes. And Robert Forster is in this. We are going to watch the, hold on, let me make sure
Marjorie
I have the year
Taylor
right. Green's the 1996
in this.
Classic.
Yeah.
Uncle Sam.
Hell yeah,
it
baby.
It is streaming for free on Tubi, so get those fireworks ready, boys. This is going to be a video special, so you can tune into our YouTube channel as well to see our kind of okay-looking faces. And then obviously you can listen to the podcast as well. It's your choice.
All right. Well, again, thank you, listeners, for another episode of B-Movie Mania. We appreciate all your support. Someday we'll find a way for you to pay us for all the enjoyment that we have given you. But it is not this day.
They can go to the store and buy our cool new shirts.
buy a t-shirt.
We got that brain damage shirt that's fucking flying off the shelves.
Yeah.
It actually is beautiful.
Crawl across the floor for our juicy Aylmer shirt.
It's amazing.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They are touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Or that big old unfleshed Wang shirt from Fatal Deviation. Be the first to buy that shirt. Let us know that you did.
Or just Venmo me.